first year of my PhD candidacy. It's been a challenge to structure this presentation. My passion for this area of research and practice has a broad range, and my focus and analysis are yet to be anchored by the immediacy of fieldwork. And at this stage, I've written many versions of project summaries and descriptions for grants and ethics applications. And through this, I have become increasingly aware of the many possible modes of framing and studying prison gardens. I know this is a necessary step on the way to framing and studying specific cases, but it doesn't lend much help for the purposes of constructing a coherent presentation. But I do recognize that my audience isn't typically comprised of experts in carceral geography, so rather than reproduce theories from this field, one of my aims is to use this time to articulate some theories and approaches which are yet to be integrated into general carceral and criminological research. And before discussing my current doctoral project, I'll just briefly introduce my previous research. So my interest in prison gardens started here, or for a bit more context, here. This is Alcatraz Island in the San Francisco Bay of California. And although I was born in California, I arrived here in a roundabout way while doing a Master's of Cultural Geography in the Netherlands. Nearing the end of my program, I was looking for a dissertation topic that would bring me closer to home. And I found the answer looking through this book, which to the best of my knowledge is the only book on contemporary garden tourism that isn't a travel guide. Instead, it frames practices of garden management and garden visitation as ancient global socio-ecological phenomena. The book contains a single line that mentions the historical restoration of the gardens at Alcatraz Island, and this in large part is the reason I'm here today. I went to Alcatraz and worked alongside the volunteers who are maintaining the garden since its restoration, seeking to explore what happened when I positioned the site as an active component of the U.S. prison system. Notably, this is an approach that differs from the strictly historicizing narratives put forward under the management of the National Park Service. I wanted to know what this positioning revealed to me about prisons and what it revealed to me about gardens. And my time at this prison museum garden made me aware of the limitless iterations of what I've begun referring to as carceral horticultural interfaces. This term is a riff on what some anthropologists have begun referring to more generally as human-plant interfaces. Gibson and Ellis grapple with the incessant relegation of plants to the background of human activity throughout much of history. They claim that a range of effects and affects emanate from the vegetal world. Many of them are misrecognized, unacknowledged, or simply explained away as mere metaphor. While my adoption of this concept is yet to be fully thought out or put into practice, it has helped me to avoid getting caught up on broader questions like when is a group of plants a group of plants, and when is it a proper garden? And one of our favorite questions, when does a place become a prison in the strict sense of the word? On a timescale that I see as going beyond the 3 to 4 year period of my PhD, the general aim of my research has become to undertake multidisciplinary ethnographic explorations of dynamic carceral horticultural interfaces and the movements among specific sites, movements which might be said to comprise a carceral horticultural network. Here I've listed some examples of sites where such interfaces are active, and my current project focuses on the movement of knowledge and materials within and between the first two types, prison gardens and post-release gardens. In particular, I'm looking for case studies where people who, with the help of educators who bring plant knowledge into the prison, study horticulture or learn to garden while incarcerated. I'm also interested in what happens when these prison gardeners can and do continue to apply this knowledge after having been released. Before going deeper into my research, I'll quickly summarize some previous work related to the carceral and the horticultural, which does include some papers we've seen presented during this conference. In general, this work is related to aspects of psychology, such as Moore's exploration of the relationship between cell block design and healthcare service demands. It's also related to green criminology, as in the case of White and Graham's exploration of the greening of the broader criminal justice system, and to the two articles featured here. And while I in no way intend to dismiss the critical importance of this work, I have to emphasize that most aspects of prison gardens remain highly under-acknowledged and under-researched, due in large part to the inherent limitations of prison research. That being said, two of the main questions guiding my research include: how are prison gardens and post-release gardens being imagined, understood, and brought into being? What flows of knowledge, life forms, and materials are involved in the realization, maintenance, and production plans of prison gardens and post-release gardens? Some of the things I aim to follow are the norms and objectives of specific carceral contexts and horticultural programs, the concerns, interests, and experiences of people who are giving shape to these spaces, the ways in which specific forms of knowledge and material are incorporated into these settings through the words and behaviors of human and more than human participants, and the ways in which gardens render the prison porous via the flow of knowledge, materials, life and death in and out of the prison garden boundaries. Given that this work is so multidisciplinary, there are many useful frameworks that have been helping me to push my ideas along. Here I'll briefly summarize just three of these concepts, which I'm still working through myself. They're pretty dense, so. Gardens are presumably enlisted into carceral regimes as therapeutic or somehow beneficial because they are fundamentally relational spaces that can provide social and sensory experiences that are otherwise withheld in prisons. It's therefore useful to base my work in part on ideas of intersubjectivity, such as Deleuze and Guattari's early musings on deterritorialization, reterritorialization, the rhizome, and becoming. I won't read this whole quote, but they are talking about the pollination of an orchid that looks like a wasp by a wasp that thinks the orchid is a wasp. And here we see the becoming orchid of the wasp, the becoming wasp of the orchid, the two becomings intertwining and relaying each other in circulation. So these words help us to begin imagining the non-human place of the garden as absent of hierarchy or binary, wherein many things are open to exploration and negotiation in a way that doesn't apply to most spaces of the prison. In her book, Staying with the Trouble, Donna Haraway writes, "We live in troubling and turbid times. The task is to become capable of response. The task is to make kin in lines of inventive connection, as practice of learning to live and die well with each other in a thick present. Our task is to make trouble. In fact, staying with the trouble requires learning to be truly present, not as a vanishing pivot between awful or Edenic pasts and apocalyptic or salvific futures, but as mortal critters intertwined in myriad unfinished configurations." She positions taking residence in troubled spaces as a position beyond a comic faith in techno fixes or a position that the game is over. This invitation is especially salient in prison research, which so often must be instrumentalized for the purposes of creating better and better future prisons. It invites us to see what is happening now under the conditions that are already in play and to be present with one another within those conditions. I'll skip ahead to introduce critical plant studies into the field of carceral geography. This is a field best encapsulated by an edited volume put out last year by Monica Gagliano and her colleagues entitled The Language of Plants. They offer up critical plant studies as an emerging field, which offers a broad framework for reevaluating plants, their representations, and human-plant interactions. This involves a synthesis of principles of ethics, aesthetics, agency, intentionality, communication, and language. And this brings me to methodology. The work I'm proposing to do requires a degree of methodological promiscuity, something which is becoming increasingly common under different names. The name I'm going with is multi-species ethnography, which is a methodology through which scholars synthesize bodies of knowledge, field approaches, creative practices, and processes of analysis from a range of disciplines, typically biology and ecology, disciplines that are directly concerned with the lives and deaths of various organisms, and coupling these with the traditional methods of ethnography, interview, and participant observation. This enables scholars within the social sciences and humanities to do the collaborative, political, ethical, environmental work of decentering the human through the questions we ask, the tools we use, and the stories we tell. So here I want to emphasize my intent of using the stuff of the garden to elicit data about plants, knowledge of plants, and plant practices, and my wish to become a gardener alongside other gardeners. I want to wrap up by addressing some of the challenges I'm encountering so far, and there are many. One of these is my aim to use the typically disparate fields of carceral studies and multi-species studies to learn more about the strengths and weaknesses of each. In particular, I want to consider the term non-human, which is problematized both in multi-species studies for its inherent anthropocentrism and carceral studies for its use to describe people dehumanized by punitive and racist state structures. This, I believe, points to a larger tension of trying to do critical research on prison gardens, that is, how to avoid the risks of depoliticizing these spaces in moments where perhaps environmental concerns begin to come to the forefront. I want to conclude with this image of a prison gate overgrown and held open by a thriving ice plant. This is on Alcatraz. Here I want to consider the notion of metaphor, which is ever present in the space of the prison garden. Following the words of Bénédicte Boisseron, who argues in her book Afro-Dog, Blackness, and the Animal Question that, though one should not ignore entangled forms of oppression, analogizing can be harmful when it is meant to serve one cause over the other, when its sole function is, for example, to serve the animal cause by instrumentalizing the black cause. One of her goals is, quote, to show how these two subjectivities, the animal and the black, and those two fields, animal studies and black studies, can defiantly come together to form an interspecies alliance against the hegemonic, white, human, patriarchal, dominating voice. So what I'm hoping is that my project might someday meet a similar goal for the subjectivities found in the prison garden. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Elizabeth. Lots of interesting stuff in there. Oh, hands already straight up. Let's go here first.
Okay, I mean, that was absolutely fascinating. That was really, really well done, and I think very original, but I'm sitting here thinking about a novel that I read earlier this year, and